Blog Talk Radio.
Golden dreaming beauty man, is it only fantasy? Sometimes one can't help but wonder, will it ever truly be? Some people keep on saying, all is illusion and lies. Why is it so hard to believe there are better days to see? So it seems like the world is tumbling down. It's the darkest time of night. Right before dawn, here comes the time.
Blessings and greetings, greetings and blessings, blessed souls. We're alive because we've been blessed to stay alive by the Almighty Creator in Torah Chaim, instructions of life, Torah Chesed, instructions of kindness, Torah Rachamim, instructions of mercies. You're now tuned in to blogtalkradio.com, and we humbly suggest we're the inner higher frequency of blogtalkradio.com. We call ourselves Soul Class. This happens to be Soul Class 557, Secular by Design. Program presentation number 55, and we're staying alive. Blessed is our Creator, Baruch Hashem, Shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the human family experience. With Creator's help, we're now broadcasting at 9:32 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, live from Turtle Island, a.k.a. equals the USA equals Unified Soul Actualization. Program will focus on reading from Alan W. Cecil's Secular by Design, A Philosophy of Noahide Laws and Observances, and is a recommended purchase, which you can access by clicking on www.goodreads.com/book/show/18126658-secular-by-design. Our call-in number right now is 347-838-8669. Meanwhile, may the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones peacefully and pleasantly. And just to point out, today's tags for today's program are Eternal Creator, Divine Image, Universal Redemption. And what are the children of Israel and the children of Noah going to do to remove hatred, jealousy, and unnecessary competition, which is causing a lot of problems in the earth right now. But in order for us to get on with the shoe, we're going to have to turn down the music. From Here Comes the Time, from Generation Redemption album, Blessed Brother in Spirit, Prayer, and Soul, the president of Beit Mazal Shul at 1433 President Street here in Kessler Crown Heights, Brooklyn, New York, located between Kingston Avenue and Albany Avenue. Shabbos prayers will commence with the blessings of the Most High this coming Saturday, this coming Shabbat Kodesh by day at 10 a.m., where you can hear actual chanting out of ancient Israelite liturgy, as it is enclosed within authentic Jewish, Moroccan, North African singing and chanting. And then there's usually a brief bite to eat afterwards, and there's some warm talks. Everyone who can't come is invited to come. Now, let's get on with this show, because everyone's got to get ready. Yes, Rebobzik, I'm ready, but I'm now ready to turn down your music, unfortunately, and let's just turn it and get right on the shoe. And we're going to now bring in as well our co-host, Rambam, teacher, student, activist, and advocate for the dissemination of the teachings of the Nesher HaGadol, the great eagle, Rambam Maimonides, Rabbi Moshe Ben Maimon, Dennis Ryan, who with Dennis Ryan, you know, he'll always be trying. Good morning, Dennis.
Boker Tov, Don, and to all our listeners.
Thank you, Dennis, and that's to all the listeners all around this blessed world. Creator's world, that's what makes it blessed. I just want to point out today's program is dedicated towards the Refuah Shlema, complete healing of my father, Reb Shlomo Yaakov Ben Esther, and also for the strengthening of spirit and soul and body of my mother, Maras Yiska Bas Chayasara. Here we go, blessed souls. And I, just one more thing I want to mention. We know that the primary elections were over last night in New Hampshire, and my utmost prayers that as these elections continue, that the candidates get to some real meaty issues, like why is it that 1 in 5 children in America don't get sufficient food? Why is it still the economy is not local market economy? Why isn't it there a national discussion of how to ensure sustainable and plentiful supplies of water so we shouldn't have another fiasco? It's a national embarrassment. It's a statewide embarrassment. It's a county embarrassment. What took place and has been transpiring up in Flint, Michigan. Dennis, any take on these matters before we go into the meat of today's program?
Yes, we seem to be losing our national identity to a certain extent. Why? Because of the just mentioned things that used to be automatically taken care of by our government. But now our government seems to be observing what's going on as opposed to helping us so that we can benefit by our national representation that we show to the rest of the world. Because how can we show good example if we are not practicing it? So why would we pick a river that has pollution in it over a river that doesn't have any pollution in it? Doesn't make sense. But then again, a lot of things don't make sense, and that's why so many people are a little disturbed and have a little anger in them, because our government is missing the point.
Excellent point, Dennis. No pun intended. I heard someone say yesterday on the radio, I think it might have been on, you probably heard of New York Public Radio with Brian Lehrer, and he was interviewing someone, I didn't catch his name, and he was saying that there's a mindset that has, so to speak, enveloped the country, that the government makes the people great. So he was saying it's just the opposite. The people of this nation are what make the government great. It's what makes the nation great. And when we start from a community-based sense of awareness and participation, whatever service can be offered, this, in fact, contributes to the betterment of society at whole. Any take on that before I get... Again, we're kind of getting tangential, but I think it's also connected to the spirit of this book, Secular by Design, by Alan W. Cecil.
Well, you are right, Don, by saying it's community-oriented. But America has always stood for a bunch of communities acting together in unity. And that is why we have states that make up our nation that work together, even though you live in different states. In other words, we have a common interest. And that common interest is what represents us to a certain extent. Since we all believe we should all do similar things. There's nothing wrong with that. So therefore, there's what we call a national conscience that's involved here. And that has always worked. But for some reason or another, we have switched away from this concept of unity and have emphasized individualism, which is nice, but we were all designed to live together. So if you try to stretch the concept of individualism, you start tearing apart those are the principles and the morals that were put together that represented America.
Beautiful, Dennis. Now let's go right into the program. Thank you for those salient points. We're talking, the context we are within Blessed Souls is the historical portrayal of the decline and fall of the Roman Empire, which was published first in the late 18th century, whose author was Edward Gibbon. And we're going to start off from last week where we ended, quoting from Gibbon's book, The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, as Alan did, from pages 348 and 349. And it goes as follows. A single people refused to join in the common intercourse of mankind. The Jews, who under the Assyrian and Persian monarchies had languished for many ages, the most despised portion of their slaves, emerged from obscurity under the successors of Alexander. The sullen obstinacy with which they maintained their peculiar rights and unsocial manners seemed to mark them out a distinct species of men who boldly professed or faintly disguised their implacable hatred to the rest of humankind. Neither the violence of Antiochus, nor the arts of Herod, nor the example of the circumjacent nations could even persuade the Jews to associate with the institutions of Moses the elegant mythology of the Greeks. And Dennis, last week I focused on the point of how the Jew, he's portraying our people as someone that had an implacable hatred for the rest of humankind. I think today's program, and programs, many programs have come before me in the past several generations of Jewish people getting on public media stages and promoting not hatred, but brotherhood. You had in the 1960s with the civil rights movements. There was the rabbi who himself, I think, was a survivor of the Holocaust. He worked hand-in-hand with Martin Luther King. You know, again, my own little humble efforts. You know, this Gibbon, I think, was really chewing the fat of anti-Semitism. But ultimately what he was doing, too, was creating a chaotic portrayal of the Jewish people. I mean, you know yourself better than I. Rambam was not someone who promoted hatred of human beings. And while we might not have embraced the elegant mythology of the Greeks, we have embraced the sciences, we have engaged ourselves in the sciences, we have encouraged other people to engage in the sciences. And then we had someone like Albert Einstein reminding everyone, who was not a Torah observant Jew in his lifetime, that science with all of its profundities is still a matter of a playful thing in the hands of human beings. And he also brought into the idea of a God. Now, how we perceive God is not necessarily how I might perceive God through the Torah telescope or periscope or microscope. But this type of mentality, unfortunately, still continues to filter into modern-day society. But it's not only against the Jews. It's against the African-Americans, against the Asians. It's against the Mexicans, it's against the Arabs. So we're talking a type of attitude of Dennis, which just promotes disunity among human beings. Your comments on these matters.
Well, instead of understanding why people are different and why they are different, we automatically go ahead and label them as different, but we associate they're different because they want to hate. So it's very easy to portray anybody who looks like they're out of the mainstream, so to speak, as being different because they want to be different. And how they show it is because they hate all the other people. Well, that's a construct that sounds so simple, and it's so satisfying to people who want to rationalize things. Yet they never go into the fact as why are they different? What makes them different from us? If they're human, how much different can they be from us? So we have a lot of fundamental questions that are never addressed or answered because it's far easier to wash over it and put them in a category of they don't want to belong. So that's because they're hating everybody else. So this is an easy concept to sell because that solves everybody else's personal problems because even though they may hate, it's the other person who's the hater. So let's point the finger and be with it and let that happen, and everybody will say the world is rosy and keeps on going. But the problem is, as we keep integrating our ideas and demographics of people, this is a changing concept that humans have to understand, or else they're just going to be fighting and arguing with each other forever and ever. So we have to go back to fundamentals and understand that. And just because a group doesn't want to do what the mainstream is doing, that doesn't mean they're bad. It just means they have a different opinion. And after all, having an opinion is not a bad thing.
True. And I just want to reflect. I just heard on, again, National Public Radio this morning about the unfortunate, unnecessary murder of two of a Muslim couple. Oh boy, was it North Carolina? It was on the East Coast 1 year ago today. And it was, he was 23, and I guess she was around that age as well. They were engaged to get married. And they were at their home in their apartment with the sister of the soon-to-be bride, and there was a knock on the door, and a neighbor came in, and over some sort of parking dispute earlier in the day, maybe a day before, whatever, he shot them to death with multiple gun wounds, gunshots. And the survivor of the woman who was supposed to get married, the mother and the daughter were talking about, should they, in reaction to this, how should they react? There was community outreach to the Muslim community down there. And please forgive me, blessed souls, I don't remember. I think it was in the Carolinas, on the East Coast. And the mother and the daughter decide we'll put on our hijab, which is like the head covering for a woman of Islam faith. So for me, as a Torah observant Jew, I respect that tremendously. We have our married women have reasons for covering our hair, and we've even had historical periods in our people's cultural nuances where unmarried young women and girls also cover their hair. Fine. But they were talking about how the moment they put on the hijab, that they felt people were looking at them unnecessarily. And so they came to a conclusion, which I heartily, you know, agree with them, and I affirm their feelings, that we believe in the beauty of our faith, and therefore we shall express it. And by the way, because of our names, and if people ask about our backgrounds, they felt different about us anyway. So they felt that they should do that to affirm what they are, and I say more power to them. Now, I guess in the Trump camp, they're not going to like what I'm saying, but lo and behold, as an Orthodox Torah observant Jew, I respect the right for someone to keep their faith, and I say, exemplify it to others, so hopefully one day they'll exemplify their faith, not preach it to others, but exemplify it to others in a very public and modest fashion. And the mother's consideration was, well, I was concerned about the welfare of my daughter, so I'll wear it. And the daughter said, well, I was concerned about the welfare of my mother, so I'll wear it. So both of their faiths strengthen their others, and hopefully that will strengthen other people's faiths, whether they be Muslim or otherwise. Dennis, your take on this matter.
Yes, well, this is really a simple matter that goes way back into human history, and that is head coverings. Head coverings have been in existence for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And one of the main reasons, other than to block out the sun so you don't get a sunburn on your head, is to show respect for God, a head covering. And people have been doing this throughout the ages. It is not new. For a long time, even in this country, when Christians would go to church, women would always wear some head covering. Sometimes even a handkerchief was put on their heads. So this is not unusual. So to think that people are still using this to show respect because that's what they believe in, you take even different hats that signify religious, non-religious people. But a lot of religions still believe that you have to wear a hat that's appropriate for your station in relation to God. So it isn't that someone just wants a head covering. There's a purpose. If you don't That's right. understand the purpose, then you may mock it because you may not think that it's useful or there's any meaning behind it.
True. And people shouldn't think that if an Islamic woman or a Jewish woman cover their hair or what other face, I think they're also Hindu women, they're not doing it just because they didn't wash their hair, they couldn't do anything with their hair. It's because they are expressing, I think, in a very modest and to me, modesty is an expression of the woman's beauty, not just her physical features. That's what defines her as a human being from the feminine side of the human equation. So I heartily applaud publicly, although they won't probably hear this broadcast, but those who do hear this broadcast, again, my intent is whatever I can do in my own humble efforts to this radio show is to help people feel a well-balanced pride in their faith as they understand what they should believe in and their trust in the Almighty Creator. I'm sure, Dennis, you're in the same congregation as me. If you'd like to embellish my point, please go ahead.
We have a sect in India called Sikhs, and the Sikhs believe that as you become an adult, you must have your head always encased in some type of clothing. So they practice even when they're small, so that they're preparing when they become an adult, the men, that is, would have their head covered. Now, some people would say, why are they wearing turbans? Why do they want to be different? They don't want to be different, but they believe, and that's a way of showing respect to God, of always having your head covered. Now, that is not a new idea, as I just explained. So some people still practice that. I mean, all different people have different hats, and you can tell, actually, and recognize certain people by the type of hats they wear. Or even, let's call it this, skull coverings. Coverings have been used as a religious significance to show that you're not wearing a full hat, but you have a covering so that when God's looking down at you, he will see that you're showing respect, but instead of bowing your head, you're having it covered. So this is a simple human concept. If you want to take it out of context, yes, you can say this is a significant thing that those people want to be different. Do they want to be different by honoring God?
I'll just add, and as we move on with reading from Alan's book, that the reggae music legend Bob Marley, whose birthday just passed this past Sabbath, 71 years since he was blessed to come on this earth, he wrote a song, "Who the Cap Fits, Let Them Wear It." Let's go further. Now, that quote that I read from Gibbon's The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire was followed by the following writing by Alan W. Cecil in terms of the public promotion, as he understood the historical portrayal of the Jews having an implacable hatred towards humanity, and particularly the Greek and Roman civilizations. This was a great affront to the Greeks and the Romans that the Jews had so little respect for the culture and civilization which the classical world thought superior, and they stubbornly held onto their quote-unquote institutions of Moses. It did not occur to Gibbon or the Greeks that it was this very separation of the Jews from the nations of the world that enabled them to preserve these institutions of Moses, or why the Jews thought that their Torah-based culture was superior to the elegant mythology of the Greeks. Of course, from the Noahide perspective, Gibbon was looking through the wrong end of the telescope. It was mankind that refused to join the common intercourse of Israel, the kingdom of priests and holy nation, the keepers and teachers of the Torah. Most of the great body of rabbinic commentaries on the Torah are unknown to the world's population since they have been ignored by Western scholars for most of the past 2,000 years. Alan continued, Christianity has only looked at the superficial themes of the Torah, such as the creation of the world, the fall of man, the flood, and the lives of the patriarchs. In fact, since the Enlightenment, the prevailing view among scholars of biblical history, especially of Genesis, is that the Bible was looked upon as a series of fables and myths. And from there, Alan quoted in footnote 7 from Mark Edward Lewis's The Flood Myths of Early China, printed in 2006 by the State University of New York Press, page 4, tales of the world-destroying flood are one of the most widespread and continuously evolving categories of stories in the world, and probably the most exhaustingly studied by scholars over the centuries. The most thorough collections of such tales have described more than 300 examples drawn from every continent. Western studies of the flood across the centuries were dominated by the biblical tale of Noah, although versions of the myth were also known from ancient Greece and Rome. I'd just like to mention to Mr. Lewis, although again he's probably not listening in, that there happens to be an unmythical remnant of the Ark lodged in the side of the mountain of Mount Hararat in the country which is known as Turkey. And this has already been shown and proven. And I look forward to that one day when government permission is given by Turkey to extract whatever's left, and then they can do, if they want to do a carbon 14 dating process, to see that this nautical vessel, which somehow got to the side of a mountain, is over 4,000 years old. concluding at the to the bottom of the page, that the Bible was looked upon as a series of fables and myths more suitable for bedtime stories for children than for serious historical scholars, although many blame the heretic Jewish philosopher Baruch Spinoza for first criticizing the authenticity of the Torah. His view was hardly original. And here Alan notes in a footnote 8 by Professor Paul Eidelberg, Beyond the Secular Mind, page 53, no one who has mastered or at least has worked with the few who have mastered the logical controls and the hermeneutical rules of the Talmud. I'll tell you the truth, I don't even know what the word hermeneutical means, blessed souls, but I know there's known as 13 ways of deriving legal judgments up the, which are can be extracted out of the Talmud, which without the written Torah, long trifled with by outsiders, remains a closed book. No mere philosopher, Spinoza included, has entered this exclusive domain. Finishing out this, the end of this page, although many blame the heretic Jewish philosopher Baruch Spinoza for first criticizing the authenticity of the Torah, his view was hardly original. In the 2nd century CE, the Roman writer Celsus said that Genesis was a collection of ancient fables and myths, similar to what the Hellenized Jew Philo hinted at 200 years earlier. Their criticisms were not unknown to the rabbis, who responded in depth, but the rabbis and their explanations to the problems with the text were ignored. Take, for example, well, we'll stop there and then we'll read on further. I just want to mention, before I turn to Dennis for feedback, I want to mention that we have to keep in mind, blessed souls, that it, again, just as the government is made up by the people, I just want to mention that when we talk about Christianity, we talk about Judaic faith, we talk about Islamic faith, I don't think that any of these books are looking at superficial themes of the Torah, but rather it's people that are reading that could interpret them superficially, because later on we do see the likes of Thomas Aquinas and other modern-day Christian scholars have certainly taken a more serious, non-superficial viewpoint of the Bible, which we call the Torah, and not just isolated the creation of the world, the fall of man, and flood in the lives of the patriarchs. And the Rambam himself, I've said this many times, and I'm going to continue to drill this point down until no one should forget, and hopefully more people will learn about it, is that Maimonides writes in the code of his Jewish law, known as the Mishnah Torah, that, again, we do not agree theologically with certain and sometimes many of the tenets of Christianity and Islam or the Muslim faith. However, we do recognize, because the thoughts of Creator are not our thoughts, that these two faiths or religions, whatever you want to call them, are here to help herald in the redemption of the human family experience along with the Judaic teachings. So I've said a lot, and I'm now looking forward to how Dennis reacts to what I just read and what I and how I commented on from Alan's book. Dennis?
Well, I'm willing to go one step further than Alan. Alan said they ignored what was in history previously. I'm willing to say that they purposely misplaced it and put it away so that they didn't want to be bothered by it. Why? Because there's a prevalent concept that runs through many, many different things. And I always think of the only opera that Beethoven ever wrote was called Così fan tutti in Italian. And what it means is that everyone is doing it. And this is what we humans, tend to do. Since we're all doing it, it must be right. So all of a sudden we think that because we're all doing it, it's the correct or the right way. But we don't measure it up to principles, morals, or anything else. And that's why the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, and I'm sure the people who lived there at the time, said, well, everybody's doing it. Well, we all know what happened to those two cities. Why?
Oh, yeah.
Because they thought they had the best idea, and it was reinforced by other people doing it. Wow, that sounds so nice and rosy. But there's a string attached to everything. And to think that all of a sudden humans have free thought and they don't have to pay attention to anything else except themselves shows the lack of humility and the egos that just come out and float to the top. And this has been a pervasive problem that we've always had, that if you're not in the group doing it like everybody else, there's something wrong with you. And if we don't know what it is, we'll create something. And we'll even use the word haters, because it's so easy to put things in shoeboxes like this. But just because everybody is doing it doesn't make it good or bad, because you are falling into a human trap that's using human values to do the soul judgment. And the other thing that you also mentioned, and this was a shock to me as I was growing up, somebody explained to me that the religions, that there's a bunch of mysterious religions. I said, what do you mean? There's no mystery in that. God is God. The person said, no, from an objective viewpoint now, and that is that you can't prove anything because it's all in your mind and it's your faith and belief. And I said, what's wrong with that? Well, the person said, well, in human terms, there is no real solid proof. In other words, we have a system of laws and we believe in evidence. But you can't even give me any evidence that Jesus of Nazareth even existed. You don't have an eyewitness. You don't have any written proof. You don't have any video. You're not offering any proof. You're basing it on what your mind believes. I said, yes, what's wrong with that? He says, but there's no proof. I said, don't hold that against me. My belief is greater. I don't care what the human side wants. I know what the eternal side wants. So based on that, I felt like I had a greater calling than just looking at the minimal. The minimal is what the humans require on the planet. So let's get back to this, everybody's doing it. That doesn't mean it's correct or good, but I'm not going to judge because there's only one judger. But don't give me the example or the reason, oh, I did it because everybody else was doing it. No, that's a cop-out in the worst way.
Thank you, Dennis. And I just want to also mention, Dennis, that from my learning about Sodom and Gomorrah, actually there were five, and according to the oral Torah tradition, there were actually five municipalities, not just two. And their conduct was such that everyone's doing it. What was one example of everyone doing it? If someone was on the corner selling, say, grapes or apples, so one person would say, well, I'm not going to buy, I just want to taste one. So his neighbor would say, me too, me too. And then you would have a whole group of people crowding around that person, and no one would buy. They would only just taste one. And at the end of that flurry of people tasting just one, he was left for nothing to sell in the marketplace, walking home just with a broken spirit, that all of his effort was in vain. This was the type of attitude. Well, I'm just taking one. I'm just one person. You know, I recently had a situation in the Borough Park community where I saw someone taking like a handful of cherries. Actually, this was like in late last spring. And I said to him, you know, you might come from a culture where that's acceptable, but over here, you know, the store owner might have you arrested. And he goes, no, it's only a couple. It's only a couple. It's not going to bother him. I said, so-and-so, guess what? Don't try to read the mind of the owner, because you don't know what he's paying for the high rents that are in Brooklyn and for the cost of those cherries. You know, it's an attitude of, you know, listen, people should feel entitled to certain things. I have no problem with that. I have no problem with Social Security, and hopefully there'll be a rectification and an upgrading of this national insurance policies that have been foisted upon the American people with whatever tension they may have been, good, bad, or indifferent. But, you know, people have to have a sense of what is proper conduct. And if proper conduct is just to attack another people without thoroughly investigating why they're acting like they are, just like these two Islamic women, mother and daughter, felt that just by putting on the hijab that they would be looked at strangely and perhaps it could lead to other acts against them, whether verbal, emotional, God forbid physical, and I say God forbid on the emotional and verbal as well, you know, we have to take stock of ourselves, blessed souls. And yet, in the face of that, Western civilization has been bombarded with the teachings of the likes of Gibbon. I'm going to read further on from footnote 9 on page 108 from Allen's book. There, the Jews' irreconcilable hatred of mankind, instead of flaming out in acts of blood and violence, evaporated in less dangerous gratifications. They embraced every opportunity of overreaching the idolaters in trade. They pronounced secret and ambiguous imprecations against the haughty kingdom of Edom, according to the false Josephus, which, by the way, Josephus is one of those who testify, Dennis. He testified as to the actual physical existence of Jesus of Nazareth. Tisepho, the grandson of Esau, conducted into Italy the enemy of Aeneas, king of Carthage, another colony of the Idumeans. Flying from the sword of David, took refuge in the dominions of Romulus. For these or other reasons of equal weight, the name of Edom was applied by the Jews to the Roman Empire, which happens to be, as a member of the Jewish community, this happens to be a historical fact. If Gibbon is just saying we like to apply it, it's because this is the chronological and, you know, the chronological history of the roots of the Roman Empire being born out of one of the descendants of Edom. There's no shame in it. There's no glory in it. It just happened to be a historical fact. From the Jewish point of view, it was not simply that the descendants of Esau founded Rome. The Edomite spirit, the spirit of violence and war, permeated Roman culture. Along with this tendency for violence to rule others by strength, Rome also inherited Esau's hatred for his brother Jacob. Along with adapting much of the Greek culture, Rome also adapted the Greek penchant for anti-Semitism. In the 4th century, where Christianity became the official religion of the Roman Empire, the theological hatred that Christianity had for the Jews fused with the deeper hatred of Esau. This is the theme that Maurice Samuel wrote about in his book, You Gentiles, the difference between the focus of the implacable evil of Esau, and the spirituality of Jacob. Now again, Alan is speaking in general terms, and there are always exceptions to the rules. You can find righteous descendants of Esau, and you can find, unfortunately, Jews who have gone off the path and can promote just as much, if not more, evil. And I'm not going to cite any examples, but it's just historically true. And this is something which is found in the... Again, it comes down to blessings. Everyone has to stand on their own 2 feet in terms of what type of moral stance, what type of spiritual stance, what type of cognitive stance they're going to take in terms of how to relate to Creator, in terms of what their individual responsibilities are to themselves, to their families, to communities, and to the world at large, as much as they can have a positive effect on the world. Dennis, your take on these matters.
Well, this all goes back to what is truth. Truth is what we believe is the real thing. But what is the real thing? If we can accept little white lies, everybody says, oh, it's only a little one. It's only a little white one, not a black one. And because it's little, it's not big. But what does it lead to? It leads you away from the truth. If you constantly allow these perceptions to come into your view and accept it, that you're now rationalizing things, you're not holding it up to a true value. So what we've had here is, over history, people telling different stories, and they add these little white things in there. To the point, what happens if the little white lies keep growing, and all of a sudden, our government uses little white lies on us? Has the truth been distorted? Do we really know what the truth is? Because we're willing to go ahead and rationalize what is truth and what is a lie. If you put them in the same a bowl of soup, you won't know what you're eating or consuming. We must be able to separate those little things that start growing into something that causes distortions. So what Alan is talking about, and he's quite correct, all over the centuries, millennium, we have constantly created these little distortions as we go along. And if everybody is using the same distortion, we accept it as the truth, even though they really didn't mean originally when they started telling little white lies that there was anything wrong. They just thought it wasn't hurting anybody. But the accumulation over a period of time gives the impression that there's a different truth. So how many different truths are we going to live with? What was the perception? What was the original definition? Or we have we willing to accept a different definition of truth today? Because what has changed since the beginning of time with humans and as of today? Truth is truth, beauty is beauty, and God is God.
Beautiful, Dennis. And with that being said, Dennis, we're going to wrap up today's program. Before we do, would you like to add or offer up, share with our blessed listeners around the world another kernel of insight from your years of living upon this world, praising the Creator, performing acts of kindness, learning Scripture, learning secular wisdom, how we can blend it all together to be human beings who are capable of helping each other in a pleasant and peaceful fashion?
Well, together is a great idea and concept in what we call in America an election year. We should say a prayer for those people who are going to be in charge, whether they're old or new or something's changing, so that we will go in the correct direction that God wants mankind to go. So we must pray and hope that humans can straighten out a lot of their own problems so we will be more acceptable to God.
Beautiful, Dennis. I'll say amen to that. And that being said, blessed souls, we've come to the conclusion of another program. I think it was a vital, at times tangential, but that's what happens when people get together. You can come with one plan and somehow you're inspired to take it to another place you didn't intend, but I think we took it to a positive place. I think I was very explicitly clear about my support for the Islam Muslim female population for wearing their hijabs. I have no problem with it. And I wish them peace upon them and upon their husbands and families and children. And they shouldn't feel the stigma. You know, one time, blessed souls, I remember reading many years ago an Orthodox rabbi writing about, hearing about a case, I think it was out in Washington, Oregon State, about a tribe of Native American Indians who were denied the right by a judge in a court case to use something akin to a peyote, some sort of hallucinogenic drug. Now, I wouldn't promote it for my own personal spirituality for anyone else's, but if that is their cup of tea, is that of their faith, they should be able to practice it. And the rabbi wrote, if we don't stand behind them for the use of that part of their faith-based practice, then one day they're going to tell us that we can't drink wine, you know, for on the Saturday night, the Sabbath night or Friday night, or the four cups of wine that are part of our Passover observations. We've got to stand up for each other. And this will make for a better humankind as we segue out of today's program. We're going to play, of course, to help us get back home, Brother David Dome from England, Peace in My Mind. Just one more thing, I just want to mention that we are trying to upgrade our broadcast and audio abilities. And that, of course, we need to raise about $3,000 if anyone's interested. Unfortunately, we're not a 501c profit yet, but we will be in the near future. But this would allow us to reach a greater amount of people in order to spread teachings like this, which I think this country is sorely in need of. And this is what my mentors have taught me from here and in Israel. And the way you can reach me is my cell number is 347-613-4615. You can also make a dedication for your loved ones in honor of them, whether it be a wedding, a birthday, an anniversary of a loved one's passing or a friend's passing, the birth of a child, whatever it may be, a celebration of that particular life experience. And also you can contact me through my email. It's Don Goodman, and then punch in numerical 6, Don Goodman numerical 6 at gmail.com. That's Don Goodman numerical 6 at gmail.com. And now just to remember everyone, you've got to be good. Why do you have to be good even though it might generate some anxiety and some ambivalence and agita within you? Because Hateva Tov Lehetiv, it's the nature of the good to do good. The Creator is the source of everyone's goodness, your goodness, her goodness, their goodness, everyone's goodness. Therefore, go ahead and do something good. And don't be surprised when you feel empowered to do more good. And that should bring you more peace in my mind. Not just for you, but also for David Dome, who's going to sing about it right now. Take care, everyone.